This is an advertisement for BetterHelp Therapy Online. There are so many things that kids are curious about and they just have no fear diving in to learn something new.
Yeah, like how to do a wheelie.
Yeah. And then as we grow older, we don't take the time out to learn new things. But curiosity doesn't have to be lost to childhood. Thankfully, therapy can help you reconnect with your inner child and get you excited to learn and grow again.
Now, I might not be able to teach you how to do a wheelie, but it helps give you the skills to get back on the bike no matter how many times you've fallen off.
If you're thinking about starting therapy, then why not give BetterHelp a try?
All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
And it's entirely online, making it convenient, flexible, and suitable no matter your schedule.
With over 5,000 therapists available, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise.
Rediscover your curiosity with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/bollocks to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BOLLOX.
Go Loud. Talking Bollocks with FBT Gyms. Unleash your potential at FBT Gyms, where strength meets community. FBTGyms.ie.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Episode 193 of the Talking Bollocks podcast brought to you by Go Loud. It's me, COB.
It's me, Terry Flower.
And today we're joined by
Finn and JD.
Finn and JD, yeah.
Finn and JD.
That's simple as that, lads, yeah?
Yeah.
Tag team champions of the world, boys.
Correct.
The us judgment them, not day. Yours.
Yeah. 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 Oh, it's a boys. It does. We have the belt over the
shoulder. The smile hasn't came off your face, Terrence, since you put that over your shoulder.
Boys, has been very lucky to get this bike. Look, I wonder how much I'd get for this. If I was to sell this, boys, how much would they be worth?
Thousands of.
Yeah, definitely would, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
Sure, yeah. Like,
really?
I think five figures, yeah.
Wow, okay.
The replica ones are going for like a couple of hundred, aren't they? Like, John, the ones that the fans still have.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not cheap.
Yeah. $700.
Finn, your eyes lit up there when he said five figures for the belt.
Yeah, well, I only thought it was about a couple of hundred quid or something to get them made.
It probably was a couple of hundred to get them made, but now they're worth more because you are wearing them. They're on the telly every other week.
The valuable part of it is.
What?
Look at those nine plates on the side there.
The Judgment Day, fellas.
Yeah.
Damn, is it?
That makes them ours.
Yeah. Very, very heavy. Like, heavier than I thought we were going
to
be.
Yeah. So, do you know, years ago when you used to see the people hitting each other with the belts, the champion would hit him and I'd be like, it's only a bit of plastic. But that's because, like, we're used to picking up the toy ones. You hit someone with that, you're getting a concussion.
Yeah.
You're that, boys. You're
getting four.
You're getting split as well. All the little, like, details on it, like, cut you open.
Yeah. So, come here. If someone else wins this, do you have to give them a new belt or do they take the belt and give them a new nameplate?
They take the belt to give them a new nameplate.
Yeah. Fuck. So it's not like the UFC where the champion keeps the belt.
No.
And then the new champion gets a new belt.
You get a little replica sent out to you if you want. You know.
It's not the same though, is it?
It's not the same.
Yeah, that's why you ever see the footballers with the replica Premier League. You're like, why have you got that? Like, it's not yours. Like, the team won it and you have one of them in your gaff.
Yeah.
Finn, you said you listen to the podcast, frequently enough. We mentioned this a few months ago. So we reached out to you, when was it, last year, the year before?
2022, I think we reached out, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you messaged us back a few months ago.
Yeah.
And we were like, what the fuck? I remember getting a notification and being like, Finn Balor replied, and I was like, what the?
He sent it to me, and I was like, is this real?
Yeah. Anytime someone texts us, I'd be like, Terrence is at the moment, and I do think Terrence made a fake page. And then, like, you know what I mean?
Bought 10 million followers.
But like, remember what happened with Ian Garry, I rang you and you were laughing and I was like, ah, you got me. And he was like, got you what? And I was like, oh, that wasn't you then. So like, I find it hard to believe that people of you as a stature do be listening. But yeah, you listen frequently enough, so you'd know what a zinger is then.
I know what a zinger is. He's got a few zingers for us.
I have one because I was trying to think of one that'd be a bit in theme, right? And I seen recently that talking about bringing WrestleMania overseas, so they're talking about Wembley, they're talking Saudi, they're talking somewhere else in Europe. So would you rather WrestleMania in Croke Park, but you can't be part of it, or you headline WrestleMania and it's somewhere in the States? So you had a main match in WrestleMania in the States, or WrestleMania comes here and you can't be part of it?
Hell. That's yeah.
It's a no-brainer. I'm selfish. I'm doing WrestleMania in the States.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm his partner, so I better go with him.
Yeah. At least he's our honest lad. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, Ireland.
Yeah. If we had Pro Pack, yeah. Probably wouldn't be a bad venue for it.
No, it'd be a great venue for it eventually. It'd be class if it ever happened.
Yeah. And
maybe like once we're retired or something, we can get it in there, you know?
Yeah, I reckon they'll do the next one's in Vegas, isn't it?
Yes.
The next one's in Vegas, yeah. And I think it's the one after that they're looking to do abroad. So, they'll be abroad soon enough, but you never know.
That sellout crowd got quick as well, wouldn't it?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Like, boys, it's absolutely huge.
Yeah,
isn't
it? It's hot right now.
You probably can't go anywhere in the world anymore, can you? Like, do you just get pulled all the time?
It's a little bit easier for me and him because, like, we're of, like, normal stature kind of thing, you know? So we can kind of blend in, like, if you have a hat or whatever on. But, like, some of the lads, like Braun Strowman and stuff like that, they're getting hassled, like, non-stop, you know?
What's it like for you over here? Could you just walk down Grafton Street?
Sometimes,
I think that's mental because outside of, he's a bigger outside of Ireland than he's at in Ireland.
Yeah,
which is mental when you think about it.
Yeah. Does you ever get like, does that never fuck you up or anything? Like if he's around people are like pulling you and all, like, are you good with that?
We don't really put ourselves in a position to be seen out in public and pulled around, you know, like we're kind of just make a beeline for wherever we're going. And,
yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. It's the clever way to blade and do it. But, that in and out job.
Yeah.
Right, how are we going to go deal this week?
Wait.
I
knew it was coming on, so I was thinking of a zinger for you.
Oh, me nerd.
I got a zinger for you, lads.
I love when the guest comes with a zinger. You're like, you're doing our job for us.
Yeah.
All right, so I already told Jay this, and he thinks it's a good one, right? It's Christmas Day.
It's not a good start, actually. Right? Now, a Christmas Day.
When you wake up, you've got to fight Brock Lesnar for 1 minute. Or, from the moment you wake up, you got to keep standing until it's time to go to bed. So you got to see your granny standing. You got to watch the film standing.
Eat the dinner.
And you got to eat the dinner standing.
Your back will be wrecked.
Or you go 1 minute with Brock Lesnar. And he can just pull the head off you for a minute.
Every Christmas Day, if the
it's not just this
Christmas coming,
just this Christmas.
And are we locked in the sitting room with him? Like, can we run around the gap? No. Yeah.
Can you avoid him for at least some of the seconds?
No, you're in the octagon, and it's ding
ding. It's not even in the ring; it's in the octagon.
Yeah. It's in the octagon. Yeah.
I thought it was in your sitting room.
It can be anywhere you want. But it's not going to be pleasant, that's for sure.
Well, like if you were in the octagon, he's not F5ing you. If you're in the ring, you're getting an F5 off him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But you're not eating your dinner if you get a right hand off him either.
That's what I'm saying. So it's either you're lying down for the whole of Christmas or you're standing up for the whole of Christmas.
Pretty much.
I love the way you made that sentence on Christmas Day and all.
You have to take a standing. You have to. Or else you don't get Christmas.
Yeah, it's not.
You might get New Year's. You might get New Year's.
You wake up.
Yeah, you might get it. Like waking up on the 3rd of January, but I miss. You know? Yeah. Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah, I'm standing in anyway.
Yeah, I'm standing. You're going to have to do it. Just set your alarm so you wake up at about 10. You know, usually you're up really early on Christmas morning. You're getting a lie on. You're like, I'm not getting out of this bed until I have to. Until me nanny's at the door. Yeah. That's when I'm going. We're not going to the whole sheet and come to us. Yeah. That's a great one.
Great singer, by the way.
It is. Because I don't even want to get too bogged down on it because it's Brock Lesnar. There's no like, I'd get 30 seconds. You wouldn't.
No, you're not.
Like, there's no. It's
like a lion in the Colosseum.
Yeah.
Tear you apart.
Yeah. Okay. Do you know, like, some people, you're like, I reckon I can get 10, 15 seconds away from him and, like, push his hand. No.
He's fast.
Like, he's going through.
Especially Brock Lesnar as well. Like, and he wouldn't even take a handy.
No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't give a fuck if it's Christmas.
If it's a fight, he'd be like, this is Finn Zinger. I'm going to mill you. You're like, all right, Brock, will you relax, man? Toki's on.
Yeah. Yeah, and he'd do it with a Christmas hat on as well. Yeah. He'd be a Grinch.
Right, lads, how does two lads from where you are from make it to the WWE?
I suppose, Finn, you kind of went first.
Yeah.
So We'll go that way. Finn, you want to give us your path from Bray to the WWE and then JD, we'll go with you then after that.
So I went to school in Bray. When I was finished school, I went to England, started training in England in this place called NWA UK Hammerlock. And I was training about 2 or 3 years and the coach over there said, do you want to set up a gym in Bray or back home in Ireland basically and use it as like a little feeder system for me to get talent from Ireland over to England. So I was still kind of being trained while I was also like running this training school in Bray. Mm. But like I was almost like just a couple of years ahead of the boys that I was training. So I was still learning. But yeah, it was a mad situation. But basically, I was doing that like between Ireland and England for about 6 years and kind of thought like, I think I can like grow more like if I travel a little bit. So I have my aunt over in Boston. So I flew over to her and stayed with her and just started emailing around to see if I could get like booked on any local shows. So I started doing some local shows in Boston. And I eventually got picked up by a scout. The scout asked me to go train in California, which is like some sort of like established wrestling dojo, the Inoki Dojo in California. So I trained with them for a while, and a scout from came into that dojo and seen me and asked me to go to Japan for 3 months. So I went to Japan for the 3 months, but ended up staying there 8 years. And then a couple of times WWE had came calling, but like I never really felt like the right moment to go. Like I was still kind of like on an upward trajectory in Japan. But when I was about 33, 34, I thought like, I might miss the boat if I don't go now. Mm. So I just made the jump to WWE and kind of rolled the dice because I was super happy in Japan. And like I would have stayed there for the rest of my career. Like I had no real dream of like wrestling for WWE. But it was kind of like that curiosity that you have, like, you know, when you're kind of at that age. And I didn't want to say like, what if I had tried it, you know? Mm. So I just said, I'll just try it for a year and see what happens. And I can always go back to Japan.
Yeah.
But like, that's 10 years ago now.
Yeah. How do you even, how does becoming a professional wrestler even cross your mind? Especially growing up in Ireland.
Yeah.
You're coming in from Bray. I know your family are well in with the rail services.
And I am too. I worked in Conley Station for 6 years. So while I was training out in Bray and doing the little bits over in England, I was coming back and forth and working in Amien Street, like selling train tickets and giving out the timetables and all.
So how do you even think, like, I'm going to become a professional wrestler? But majority of people will be like, you could get a good career here, but like CIE, yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, that was the thing, like, right? It's like, you don't think of, like, you want to be a pro wrestler. You just, like, follow your passion and you just want to go and have a match, right? So I just wanted to, like, have some wrestling matches and it kind of, like, snowballs and builds momentum and then all of a sudden it's not as far of a leap from like working in the train station to being in WWE because you kind of like start the journey and every, you know, you don't really know how to get there or what what way the journey's going to take you, but if you just take that one step forward, like the path reveals itself. And I didn't know how I would get to WWE or even to become a pro wrestler, but I knew that you just had to do the first little bit, like have the match, try have a second match, try and have a match in a different country, try and have a match, you know, for a different promotion. So just doing little by little, like it all kind of came together, you know.
Mm. And was it a shock to the system then going to Japan?
At first, yeah, because like I'd only been really in America for about 3 months, maybe 5 months. And then like I'm in Japan and like I didn't speak the language. This was before iPhones. So like I had to walk to the phone box and it was a tenner.
How old are you?
I'm 43.
You look all right, don't you? Like, I look older than you. And I'm about 20 years younger. Sorry, yeah.
Well, yeah, so this is like before iPhones and all. So it was a real, like, it was kind of like a different world. So had to, like, kind of pick up on the language, learn how to use chopsticks. But, like, for me, like, it was exciting because I'm, like, following my dream and, like, learning, like, from all these guys that I've looked up to for years, like, that now all of a sudden I'm in these dojos with them, training, like, alongside them, not, like, just looking up to them. So it was hard, like, physically and mentally, but, like, it was still enjoyable. You know, it wasn't like, shit, I don't want to do this. It was like, I can't believe I'm getting to do this. That's Tanahashi, that's Nagata, that's Tenzan. I'm training with them lads now.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of like, you're aware that you're kind of moving up, like, gradually.
Yeah. And you said the WWE came calling probably couple of times while you were over there and you were waiting for the right time. Was that like just to get bigger for a better contract and stuff like that?
No, not necessarily, because normally you would kind of be taking like a pay cut when you change like any company, you know. But I just felt like I was still in the growing process, like in developing, you know, and I hadn't really like accomplished everything that I wanted to accomplish in Japan at that point. And I thought like, if I just stay here another year, I might gain more than like leaving now, you know? So it was just like a timing issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I felt like I had more to learn in Japan before I left.
Yeah. And then what was it like then when you first went to the WWE?
That was an adjustment too, because then like you're right down at the bottom of the barrel again, you know, because you kind of rise up through the ranks in Japan for 8 years and you're wrestling in front of 40,000 people in the Tokyo Dome. And then like 3 weeks later, like I'm in a warehouse in Florida doing rolls, like practicing rolls with the beginners class. So it's kind of like, it's kind of designed to like bring you back down and humble you again.
Yeah.
But then you just kind of like work your way up. But by that point, you've kind of got enough like awareness in yourself and what you've gone through already that like it's kind of easy. You just kind of have to tick the box. Oh, I know what they're doing. They're kind of hazing me. Do the beginners class for a while and you kind of just prove that you're not a dickhead.
Is that like an ego check kind of thing? Yeah. Like to see, oh, like, does this fella think he's too big for his boots to be in here doing the roles with the beginners? Because you achieved something in Japan, but like you're still a nobody here, that kind of buzz.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like humbling you a little bit. And just to see if you're coachable as well, because that's a very important thing, you know, because you have to take a lot of direction in our business, especially in WWE. It's a lot more micromanaged than in Japan. So it's kind of probably like a little hazing or a test to see if they really wanted to like invest in me, you know, before they like committed too much.
Yeah, well, in fairness, there is like it's a colossal machine and there's so many moving parts and every match has to have a storyline and a character. And if you're a bad egg in there, they'll just get someone else in and be like, look, why are we investing in this person?
Exactly.
And they know, like, they're the attraction. You know what I mean? I think it is a humbling experience if they can be like, yeah, we brought you in, but we can easily replace you. That kind of was like, they're around for what? 40-odd, 50 years?
Yeah, like, it's the brand now that sells. Like, it's not like one individual.
Yeah.
Like, we're all kind of very aware that we're expendable. So, you know, you kind of work for the team.
Yeah.
How did you look up to in the wrestling when you were young?
Shawn Michaels, X-Pac, Triple H, Razor Ramon, Scott Hall, like those guys.
Savio Vega.
Yeah, Savio Vega was another one that I got. He got to give me a karate kick in Puerto Rico there last year, but I was absolutely losing it.
Because
I'm like the bad guy out there going, hey, mister, I'm going to kill you, you know? And this is like a lad that I used to idolize when I was like 12 years old, like giving me a karate kick, bam, and all the Puerto Rican fans going bananas. It was class. You swear I'd won the world title when I ran back through the curtain. I was like, did you see that, Savio Vega? Just kicked the head off me.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp Therapy Online. There are so many things that kids are curious about and they just have no fear diving in to learn something new.
Yeah, like how to do a wheelie.
Yeah. And then as we grow older, we don't take the time out to learn new things. But curiosity doesn't have to be lost to childhood. Thankfully, therapy can help you reconnect with your inner child and get you excited to learn and grow again.
Now, I might not be able to teach you how to do a wheelie, but it helps give you the skills to get back on the bike no matter how many times you've fallen off.
If you're thinking about starting therapy, then why not give BetterHelp a try?
All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
And it's entirely online, making it convenient, flexible, and suitable no matter your schedule.
With over 5,000 therapists available, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise.
Rediscover your curiosity with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/bollocks to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/BOLLOX. JD, do you want to take us on your journey?
Yeah,
well,
so I walked into Finn's wrestling gym when I was 12 years old, and the first bit of wrestling I ever saw in front of my own eyes was him scoop slamming Becky Lynch as hard as physically possible in the ring. And I turned and I looked up at my mom. I said, I'm good, you can leave me here. And I went in, and back then they had like kids classes and the more advanced class, and we'd start from like 12 to 2, and then the kids would have to go home and they'd train from 2 to 6. But like you couldn't drag me out of the place. I mean, I even if I couldn't you know, get involved with the lads, I'd still say and watch them, you know, to see what they were doing. And after a little while, I guess I got good enough to start training with the older lads. And then it was really like, he lit the way for me, really. It was follow the leader, you know, like he went to Japan and he came back and he had all this new information in his head that he was passing on to us. So it didn't take a genius, you know. I just said like, well, I'll do Japan as well then if I can. So I finished school and my mum and dad, I was 20 at this stage, they wouldn't let me go without a degree from college in case I broke my neck wrestling.
That's the Irish thing.
Yeah,
smart,
it's a safety
smart move. Yeah. Smart move.
Yeah.
So I wrapped up in UCD at 21, and the next week I flew out to Japan. Didn't stay for the diploma or anything, just hit the road.
Yeah.
spent 6 months in Japan. And then I was kind of lucky. I came back here, and the Irish wrestling scene started to grow and blossom there. And I got to do a lot of independent wrestling around Europe off the back of over-the-top wrestling here in Dublin. And I go to the UK and Germany. And then I was, again, you have to be in the right place at the right time. WWE wanted to expand globally and have a feeder system in the UK, NXT UK. So they formed that, and I was one of the people selected in the first group to be a part of that roster. And yeah. I just, like Berg said, I moved up through the levels in NXT UK, went to NXT in America, worked up through there, and landed on his lap with fucking the tag titles.
Yeah. Yeah. So that trip to Japan, you went there just based off what he had been saying about Japan, was it?
Just, I could see he came back a better wrestler. You know, it's a different style, different technique, different like pacing of the match, just a different discipline, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just another like string to your bow if you can wrestle a different style with a person that doesn't speak English. Yeah. You know, it's the language of pro wrestling, you know?
Yeah. It's like a dance, isn't
exactly.
it? They're leading a dance basically, and you're just the partner there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though you're fighting each other, but it's a leading a dance.
It's a collaboration.
Yeah.
You want the match to be as good as it can be for the people.
Yeah.
And what was it like for you when you first went to Japan then?
It was tough as well.
Was
yeah.
it? Yeah.
Yeah. It was a little bit after Ferg. Now, I had a laptop with Wi-Fi, but there was no Wi-Fi in the dojo apartment. So I would go down to the 7-Eleven down the street, and I'd nick their Wi-Fi to call my mom and dad. And I'd be moved along by the police every now and again. And, you know, it was just like you'd talk to them maybe once, twice a week. And that would be the only bit of English you'd speak all week, you know, or not like broken English that you'd speak all week.
Mm.
So it was lonely and it was hard, but like the training was wild. Yeah. Made me a better wrestler and kind of hardened me as an adult, I suppose, yeah, made me into like a more complete adult, you know, surviving by myself and across the world.
Yeah, class, yeah. And you were saying it was the WWE created NXT then, was it?
Yeah.
And then you started wrestling on that. What was that like then when you got that call to go onto that?
It was, I don't know. It was beyond belief that they were coming over this way, because it was always like a far-flung dream. Like WWE over there in the States, I'm gonna have to go to America one day, and then for them to come and say they're setting up a training camp in London, like that's way more attainable, you know.
Yeah.
And then it's all, I got signed with a bunch of lads from the UK indie scene and the European indie scene, so we were all kind of like experiencing this WWE set up for the first time together. So it wasn't like I was coming in and everyone looked at me like I was the new guy, you know. We were all kind of growing our NXT UK brand together.
Much better that way, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
I'd say it's tough, obviously, going in, being the new lad on the block. If you're going in on your own, you're like, oh, fuck.
Well, I'm blessed that I had him there in the Raw locker room. Not that it's a terrible locker room or anything, but just it was a...
You know, it's a familiar face.
Yeah, there can be a couple tests, you know, or a little bit of hazing in the locker room too, but...
Yeah,
I'm sure it's the same with every job or in every office in the world.
That's what it's like,
There can be, you know.
Yeah, I suppose...
It's got a lot better.
Yeah.
And like the horror stories you heard from years ago.
Yeah.
Everyone's relatively well behaved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you come up through NXT as well, but not probably from the kind of academy route that you would have.
Mm-hmm.
And would I be right in saying that?
Yeah. Yeah. I went through the NXT system in Florida, and it was actually super beneficial for me because it was kind of like a transition. In Japan, you really only focus like on the sport part of it and the like athleticism part of it. And just go out there and have a good match.
Yeah.
But in WWE, it's more like working for the cameras, opening up, more about like learning about your character and like how to speak. So I hadn't really ever done any like talking on the mic or anything my whole career up until when I got signed with NXT. So the NXT, like 2 years that I spent there, it was a good like learning process for me to not only like get used to working the different style that WWE is, but also like learn where the cameras are, like how to open up to the cameras, how to speak a little better, how to like project more, and kind of like get familiar and comfortable even with like the inner workings and the politics of the company to kind of be better able to navigate it. Because if I had jumped straight from New Japan right onto Raw, I think like I would have been like in a shark tank, like I would have gotten eaten like a little goldfish, you know. But it was like a good like transition period for me to kind of like ease my way into the company.
Yeah.
So...
It's all them factors that I wouldn't have even took into consideration when I was thinking about that kind of jump.
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of stuff to be learning.
Yeah. And not only that, like, you're now, like, in a new country, right? And you've just moved country. So, like, you've got no support system. Like, you're learning, like, a new city. You have to find, like, a new gyms and everything.
And
I'd never had a driver's license in Ireland. So I kind of left Ireland when I was 18. Was kind of going back and forth to England. Then I was in Japan. So when I went to Florida, when I was 34, I had to get my first driver's license. So I had to do, like, you know, the driving lessons and all over there. So, like, there's more to, like, transitioning from Japan to WWE than just the wrestling aspect of it. It's like the whole life aspect of it. You know, you're moving your whole life. So it's, if I had done it from Japan right to Raw, like, I think it wouldn't have been as successful as it was with, like, that easing in process.
Yeah.
And Finn, you said, like, you just wanted to go step by step in your career, getting a match and going forward with that. And it wasn't more so, you weren't really looking to the WWE.
Yeah.
Were you, JD? Was your dream always the WWE?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Mm. It was always WWE. And if you had to put this microphone in my face when I was 14 and said, like, what's your maddest, wildest one? I would have gone tag titles with Ferg. You know?
I swear to God.
And we just lost them to the boys.
Yeah. But whenever I was growing up, if I tried to make a 5-year plan, I'd freak myself out. You know, I get, like, real nervous about, like, I'd overthink it. So I kind of adopted the same kind of approach, like, short term, like, let's just make this match that I have in front of me as good as possible and do that over and over again, and then hopefully end up where you want to be.
And who did you look up to when you were young?
In front of me, him. On TV, I liked Shawn Michaels a lot. I liked Steve Austin. Jeff Hardy as well was a huge one for me. And anyone my age, I think, you know, jumping off the shed in the backyard, Swanton bombing. They were my top three, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, class. And you've obviously met all these now, have you?
Yeah.
Met them, wrestled them, pinned them, won titles from them.
Yeah. Is it mad when you think about that? Like, these kind of superstars that you would have looked up there, and then you were in there milling them.
We don't really think about it until, like, when we come home and, like, you're talking to, like, your nieces and nephews.
Yeah.
And they're saying, like, did you beat John Cena?
Yeah.
Like, and they can't believe it, you know, or did you beat Roman Reigns? They can't believe it. So, like, we don't really think about it when we're doing it. It's not until, like, we...
It's kind of blurred, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Apparently, it's part of the job, isn't it? Like, you have to beat them. Of course, I want to beat them.
You don't really, like... There's not much time to, like, sit and process exactly what's happening. You know, it's not really until if you get hurt or something, you're out for a couple of months when you really, like, kind of sit still and go, all right, geez, I've done a fair few bits there in the last few years. But you're just so focused on getting to the next show or getting to the next city that it's not, like, time to dwell on it, really.
But especially by you as well, boys, because it's non-stop for us, isn't it?
Yeah.
We were just chatting off here. The amount of fucking travelling that you have to do, boys, made me feel travel sick just standing out in the hall. Yeah. I was like, how are you doing that? Like, that surely has to drain you.
Yeah.
It's just part of the job, right? You got to get to the place to have the match. So you just have to sit there and suck it up and... It's just one of those, like, you take the good with the bad, you know?
Yeah, because I'd say that obviously the best part is probably the matches.
Exactly, and it's such an adrenaline buzz. It's just basically like chasing a dragon, man. You endure everything else, all the training, all the flights, all the hotels, everything just for that, like, 20, 25 minutes, like, under the lights.
Yeah. When was the last time you had a show here?
I wrestled in the National Stadium in August of 2022.
Right, so it's...
WWE, I think, was right before COVID, because we were supposed to do one in the March of that year, and it got pushed to the September, and then it never happened because
it has become a lot more, like, globally. There's more pay-per-views outside of the US now.
Yeah.
And he's are doing a lot more traveling overseas, but you have to do the, what do they call them? House shows, is it?
Live events.
Live events, yeah. They're the ones that are not recorded, but, like, they're the midweek ones.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But you haven't been doing them over here a lot.
Not in Ireland, no, but we've been in the UK a lot. We've been in UK last week and we're going to be in UK in 2 weeks.
Right, and you won't get home at all?
No, there's no time, because everything's wedged in between all the Mondays. Monday Night Raw's live every week, normally from the US.
Yeah.
So if we come to, if we do Monday, you fly Tuesday to Europe, you land Wednesday morning, you wrestle Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you fly back Sunday, and then you do a Monday Night Raw again, wherever, back in the US.
So we have to leg it after this now and go to Hershey, Pennsylvania, and then back to Orlando or back to Florida to change our bags out. Then we're going to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia for a few days. doing a show there, coming back to the States somewhere. I don't even know where we're going.
For Raw.
Yeah.
And then we'll get to go back home for 3 days.
You was called a promo before you left. Where you were like, we're going back to Ireland. And they're like, have you got your passport? Genuinely, I'm actually concerned now. Diaz have his passport. All that moving around and everything that's going on. Yeah. Is good. If your head wasn't on your shoulders, you'd forget it. Like,
yeah, I nearly walked out of the house without that belt. Because the kids were playing with it like in the sitting room. So like, I had the bag upstairs and I just closed up the bag and I was walking out and I seen it laying on the floor in the sitting room.
I actually need that.
But they were that like.
And you didn't see, but when I took it out the bag downstairs, I took it out the bag and I didn't notice, I handed it to Terrence. One of my socks was stuck to the Velcro in the back of the belt.
I got the smelly back clean. They were all right there. Adidas socks as well.
Well, yeah, he's worth a few quid.
Adidas
socks. Yeah.
So I was going to take them myself. Oh.
But like, so you said he's based out of Florida. Like, is it hard to even? I don't want to say like have a family or have a life, but like they have to kind of come with us. Like, do you have a home? Like, do you know what I mean? Do you have a place where you put the key in the door? You put the feet up and like decompress.
Yeah, I've a house in Orlando that like was home, but my missus. Took a job in Miami, so we moved to Miami for a year. So we're kind of down there in an apartment right now. But the house used to feel like home, but you'd only be home like 2 nights a week maybe.
Yeah.
You know, and you go in and just relax, like, and you don't leave the house. You just like order some food, do the laundry, repack the bag, and off you go again.
And for you, JD?
The same for me, yeah.
Similar as well.
I'm still in Orlando right now where I landed when I came to NXT, but I'm going to move out to Clearwater soon and maybe that'll be feel like home, but I don't know. I've never gotten the feeling anywhere else of home, like here, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, like, obviously, just from talking to you, boys, like, is that just head-on professionals, aren't you? Like, but, like, surely that has to, like, do you ever think about that, like, for a second? Like, you don't even just get to kick the feet up and just relax ever.
No, I'm having, like, an internal dilemma.
You okay?
For the whole, like, for pretty much the last 10 years as to, like, is this worth...
Yeah,
like everything that you miss,
yeah.
Right? Because like, selfishly, like we're chasing our dreams, but also like we're kind of missing home at the same time. But then like you think like, well, I'm definitely going to regret it, right? Because, you know, people pass. And so if you miss funerals, you miss weddings, you miss birthdays. So like, you kind of have to, you kind of have to kind of come to terms with that and kind of accept that. What you do and you following your dream and kind of sacrificing things and missing them at the same time, like they wouldn't want you to give up on your dream. They'd be disgusted, you know. So it's like, what's the sweet point? And that's like the dilemma that I have.
Yeah, it's like for the good years. Outweigh the bad.
Yeah.
It's as you said, but this is what you've always wanted, isn't it? Like, this is what you're trying for. This is why you set up that gym.
Yeah.
This is what you want that gym. Loved ones would want you to do as well.
Exactly.
Like, dead or alive. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, like, this is what they wanted to do. This is what they need to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Lads, what I wanted to ask you is, I might have been fascinated by this for the last couple of days, when I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
Training. What do you do for training? How do you prepare for all that?
The training's kind of, at this point, it's more like a maintenance phase for us. But like at the beginning, like you have to do, like it's just repetitive, like running drills, like nonstop. Obviously you got to like look after your body, like stretching, building muscle, not breaking it down too much. So it's just, Jordan you went through the training more recently than me. So I've kind of forgotten about it, you know?
Yeah.
Like right now we're kind of in cruise control that we don't really need to train for the stuff that we're doing in the ring.
Yeah.
When we're in the ring, it's kind of like it's automatic, like it's programmed, like it's because we programmed it years ago. And like the idea is not to hurt ourselves. So we don't really want to be training too hard when we're wrestling like 3-4 times a week anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes some of the matches that aren't as, say, stressful, you would use that kind of like a training match to get prepared for like a bigger match.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but when you're starting out, it's a completely different story. Like you need to be in the ring like 5 days a week, like running drills, getting footwork in, like getting, like learning like kind of movement patterns to kind of figure out like what works for you and like what your style of wrestling is going to be.
Yeah, because it's like injuries, what I was thinking about. I was like, you ever see wrestlers like that? diving off top ropes and it's all flips and tricks. And I'm like, what the fuck? How are they not broke up the next day? Like,
they are.
So he's like, look at me. Yeah. Walking like he had a piano on his back.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking about that, boys. I was like, that must be heavy on the body. Like,
yeah, no, like injuries happen so often. And like, there's so much stress on our bodies already, like with the travel, especially. Mm. That like, you don't really want to be like putting too much extra stress on yourself with like ice baths and all this type of stuff, because like it's just like fatiguing your adrenaline, yeah. You know. So it's like you really need to like pace yourself to really just the peak at that like 8 p.m. in the evening.
Yeah, and the recovery must be intense. You have a whoop on your hand there.
Yeah,
give off that. We check in every morning.
Yeah. I have one as well.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, I think
I was at like, I haven't been above 40 all week.
Yeah, dictates me whole life.
Yeah.
I'm waking up in the morning, I'm looking, it's red. I'm like, that's it.
Yeah.
I'm tired. I'm just tired. And people were saying to me, because we don't drink, people are like, you live in the green now.
Yeah.
I've had nearly 2 weeks, and I'd say I've been in the green 3 times. And I'm like, well, obviously then that's just, I'm not recovering correctly. I'm training, going to bed late. I'm not like resting up enough and stuff like that. But I'd say like, you just have to have it down to like, the precise detail then.
Have you had many bad injuries?
I've had a couple.
Yeah, you've had more injuries than
I had a broken jaw in 2 places. That was brutal. Dislocated shoulder, which tore me. Rotator cuff, the labrum, the pec tendon and the bicep tendon all in one go.
You lost the belt over that, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
You won the belt first.
Well, I won the belt while that happened and I had to relinquish the belt the next day.
Sorry.
I actually won the belt with the one arm hanging off.
That happened in that match.
That happened in that match, yeah. 5 minutes into the match.
And like, how do you just go on with it then? How do you not be like, my arm's hanging off
there? With that then, yeah?
Yeah, well, you don't.
Back in.
Yeah.
And kept going.
I don't know. What was the film? Steven Seagal?
Yeah.
He does the old pop the back end and I finished the match. Yeah. But you don't really like think about like, you have to finish the whole match. I was just thinking like, I just got to do the next little bit. And I just like compartmentalized everything and I just got through like little bit by bit and eventually I won the championship. I couldn't even lift it up over my head, you know. There's a scene like that still like lives in the TV thing where like I put the belt over my shoulder, but the cameraman is like, they're in his ear saying, tell him to lift the belt over his head. So then like the cameraman kind of goes, lift the belt over your head, like, you know.
Mm.
And I'm like trying to lift it up. It's like, it's just going like click, 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 crunch, 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 crunch. And I knew like, this is going to be bad news tomorrow.
Oh, that's
how long did that keep you out for then?
9 months.
Four?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's no joke.
Yeah.
Lads, you're the tag team champions of the world, yeah?
Yeah.
How long?
Well over 100 days now. Yeah.
Is that the benchmark? That's what you have to say.
Get to 100 days, you can lose it.
Yeah, a couple of months we've been tag team champions.
Yeah.
What was that like for you to do that?
It was cool. Everyone keeps talking about like, it must be so cool for JD or Jordan to like be in WWE with Finn. But for me, like, it's amazing to have him with me because like, it was could get pretty lonely, like, and isolated out there. And you kind of start to think, am I going crazy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're dealing with like just people from different parts of the world all the time. But then to have him in the locker room with me, it's like a little slice of home, you know?
Yeah.
So,
especially then, like, from Bray as well. Yeah. Story, like, she's from Bray.
Yeah, he's from Bray. We've known each other 20 Hawk, years.
I had to be wrecked.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, like, since he's came to Raw, like, it's been amazing. Like, and like getting to win the titles with him, like, I'd kind of like done a lot in my career anyway and like wasn't really that excited about winning anymore, you know. But like when we won that was like a real cool moment. And like, yeah, I was getting emotional that night for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have the record for the quickest wrestler to become WWE champion. Did you know that?
No.
You didn't know that?
No.
You're the quickest wrestler to go from his WWE debut to champion.
Oh, well, probably right. Yeah, 3 weeks, I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... there's a little,
and I also have the record for the shortest title reign.
Well, as you said, you have to win the belt to give it back up.
Yeah. And look, what happens, right? You get to the top. I was only gonna like slowly descend down anyway. So you might as well just take the elevator. Bam.
Yeah.
Is that true? Yeah.
Yeah, he's the quickest wrestler to become from the debut.
Yeah, did I not feel like that for you? Like, cause you didn't know that. Is that not like you were only in the dark?
Yeah, because at that point, I'd been with the company 2.5 years. Mm. So like, I felt like I was kind of, and I'd been wrestling for 15, 16 years. So like, you don't really think of, I'm just with, with Raw 3 yeah. weeks, you know, so it was...
They counted from the WWE debut, the NXT.
Ah, yeah.
So you, I know you were NXT champion as well, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they went from WWE debut to champion, and it's the quickest one around it.
Wow.
That's mad.
Congratulations.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah. would you say you are in the middle of a heel phase, lads? Oh,
100%.
It's just a lifestyle, isn't it?
Yeah. What you see is what you get.
Yeah, yeah. So he's a kind of a big deal now as well. Like, obviously, I don't keep up with what I did when I was like in my early teenagers. Mm-hmm. But one thing I think is gas is that Rey Mysterio's son is used a partner.
Yeah.
And like, I remember watching him when he was like a young fella in the ring and he's crying because his dad's losing matches. And like, one of the most fucked up things, and it's only when you look back now, was, I think you know what I'm going to say, when Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero had a ladder match for the custody of him.
Yeah.
And you're like, that is fucked up. But at the time, yeah. you were like, I hope fucking Rey wins. Yeah. I hope Rey yeah. gets custody of his son.
It wasn't even as fucked up as it could have been, because I think they were going to hang him above the ring and then they second guessed it.
This is what you were up against.
But it's absolute madness, because for the upbringing that child has had, he's the most down-to-earth, relaxed, chilled-out fella you could ever meet. It's like absolutely bananas.
Yeah, he was at the Sphere card for the UFC, and he wasn't sitting beside his dad, and I was like, he's living in character. you know what I mean? Yeah, like, he doesn't like his dad in wrestling. I was like, he's living in character. The two of them are sitting beside the arena. And I was like, but this is what I was saying to you. It's kayfabe, isn't it? That's what it's called.
Yeah.
Where you differentiate between reality and the character, and exactly. some people can't.
Yeah.
So people live it. You obviously don't. But that's what that is. And I'm like, that's just mad to me. That's method acting. That's what that is essentially, though, isn't it?
Yeah. I think pro wrestling's at its best when the people that come there like willingly suspend their disbelief and let themselves go and just believe. Like everyone knows what we're doing. Isn't it? Bare knuckle brawling, you know?
Yeah.
But
You still tear your rotator cuff though. Yeah. You'll be out for 9 months.
Exactly. Yeah. There is obviously risk, but like anything that we can do to help people continue suspending that disbelief, we'll do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even like we could have turned up to the building on like the shuttle bus that time after SummerSlam, after like we'd done a storyline involving Rhea Ripley and Damian Priest, and we could all get off the bus at the same time, but there was hundreds of people there waiting with their phones out. And we thought, like, if we blow this after one night, you know, like, get off the bus together, everything's hunky-dory. Like, it'll make it online. So we made them get off the bus first anyway, kicked them out the door.
Yeah.
Did a lap of the block, came back, and we got off.
Yeah, different bus then. Yeah. But, I suppose, it enhances the product then, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask, what's the proudest moments of his whole careers so far? It's probably a hard question, that, is it?
Well, what do you mean, like, in proudest in, like, achievements or, like, favourite match or...
Let's go both.
Yeah,
if you can give us one of each.
Okay.
What was your biggest achievement and what was your favourite match?
I think my favourite achievement is winning those titles with Jordan. I think favourite match was against Samoa Joe when I lost the NXT title.
Yeah.
Just because we'd done it on a house show, a non-televised event.
Right.
So the crowd were just stunned. Like I was laying there in the ring, and like people literally like had their hands on their heads or hands over their mouth. It was almost like a weird silence. And like to get that like genuine reaction of like surprise and shock is like so rare, especially like these days with social media and everything.
Yeah.
That was like one of the coolest moments, I think, for me. And that for that reason, that's one of my favorite matches.
Yeah, class.
Yeah. My favourite achievement is the tag titles as well, obviously.
Both of you are on that for the tag team belt,
And then my favourite match I've had is actually had it on the Indies in Ireland against a guy called Gunter. He's the world champion now, but he was called Walter back then. And we had a match in Shore Road, GAA Hall. And I think the safe attendance would have been like maybe 350 and there must be 600 in there. And like the sweat was hitting the ceiling and like condensing and raining down on people. It was like red hot. Great atmosphere, and we had a belter of a match. And that was a loss for me as well. I lost the OTT title to him, and people were flabbergasted.
A favourite match is the both lost.
Yeah.
It's kind of embarrassing winning. It is, because you kind of got to stand there and go, yeah, I won, you know, and everyone goes, deadly. But like, for me, it's embarrassing.
Human winning.
I just like to 1, 2, 3 and roll out of the ring and go back, you know?
Yeah.
Let's head down, get on.
You have to milk it all. But, is it tougher? I suppose when you have a longer career, you have more of a you're more of a case study here to go off. But is it tougher now, do you think, with social media? And what I think plays into it is the fact that you have the likes of us, JD, you would be much older than us, who have come up in a different kind of era of more exposure to wrestling and more exposure to behind the scenes. Do you think it's tougher now than it would have been maybe 15, 20 years ago?
What, tougher to get in now?
No, to be actually in it now and like keep it.
I think there's more distractions now for sure with social media. Like, and yeah, a lot of people maybe put too much energy into like their character or their entrance or their music or their how they present themselves. And they spend more time on that than actually worrying about the fundamentals. Because yeah, especially like at a level where you're still growing, I think like the focus should definitely be on like the fundamentals and the footwork and like the movements as opposed to the character driven stuff. So some people kind of get distracted that they want to kind of skip that hard part, which is like learning the basics, and they kind of just want to go on to being the character Y2J or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, like instead of like thinking, oh no, let me just do this step by step and let me get to learn how to wrestle first and then I'll work on the character. So that, yeah, I think that can be a little, that's changed more recently than in my time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I found it beneficial. Here's what I just, I think, especially on the indie level, we don't have weekly television to like tell a long concurrent story, but that's what sells tickets. So I used social media when I was on the indies in Ireland to like tell a story over 6 months, 9 months, and I kept people invested in it. I'd get like, there's a great cameraman or videographer, I should say, Sean Ryan, that OTT found. And he was a game changer for my career. He made me look like $1 million. And I was getting him to come out to Bray and filming me running up Bray Head, training for my next match or whatever. I put that out on social media and that would generate a bit of buzz.
Mm.
So it can be a tool or it can distract you.
Yeah.
Depends on how you use it.
Yeah.
Now, Jordan started using it as a tool like when he was 16 years in.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. So it's not really like,
yeah,
you know,
start off that way. Yeah,
like,
sure.
Yeah, you didn't start off that way. You started off grinding on like mats in a school gym, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so he put the groundwork in.
Yeah. Then he grinded in Japan, in the dojos in Japan. Yeah. Then he used it as a tool.
Yeah. So, like, so don't just go on Instagram and call people out for a wrestling match and you're going to get a fucking title shot.
You could have the greatest character in the world, right? But if things don't go right in the match and you, like, you're disconnected in some way, and you don't know the fundamentals and you don't know what you're doing or how the body moves or what hold to apply, the curtain just comes up and it wrecks not only the match, but I think like if I can see, if the fans can see through what you're doing and they know that it's not real, then they know that what I'm doing, even if my match is perfect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We're part of a fucking team here.
Yeah, so that's what I meant. Social media is letting people in behind the curtain, and you even see tweets and it's broken down and people are like, oh, I know what's going to happen, this and that and the other and this. And you're like, oh, this is kind of, it's losing the magic it had, you know what I mean? Whereas before, like back in the day, you were like, he's fucking, like, he can't lose. Like The Undertaker losing that WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. Remember Paddy Power would take, do you remember that? Paddy Power would take him bets on The Undertaker to lose to Brock Lesnar. And Brock Lesnar was like 18-1.
Really?
Something mad money. And then he fucking won.
That one.
Yeah. But obviously they don't do it anymore. But then, like, you hear stories, like, I've heard stories about that, and supposedly, like, that wasn't supposed to happen and all, and he broke protocol and all this shit, and you're like, oh, I don't know, but then people are breaking it down on social media, no, this is what happened, and you're like, it was better when I had me, like, I didn't know, the disbelief,
I know what you mean, yeah, there's almost, like, the curtain's pulled back too much now, like, you're seeing, like, behind the scenes. That's something that I kind of am confused by, too, because, like, we're on TV, like, trying to portray what we're doing with like the greatest amount of realism possible.
Yeah.
But then like an hour later, Total Divas will come on and they're like kind of exposing it like with the training and showing how it's done. So it's like, you kind of, there's two different products that like WWE are producing. They're producing reality content, but then they're also producing this wrestling show that you have to kind of suspend your disbelief for as well.
Yeah.
Do you keep tabs on prospects in Ireland?
Absolutely.
Is there anyone you want to throw out there, any people you're keeping an eye on who you think is going to be big in the future even?
Yeah, the two fellas we're facing tonight, for people that don't know, we're here back in Ireland for OTT's 10-year anniversary. Over the Top Wrestling is a bunch of lads that like we're very familiar with that kind of came up in the scene as we were coming up, and they've kind of continued going on, and we're WWE wrestlers. Normally, we're not supposed to wrestle outside of WWE, but because of the relationship we have, we kind of pitched it to the office and kind of explained it to them. And, you know, thankfully, the office were cool about it. They wanted us to come over. It's kind of like good to kind of help, like grow the and nurture the talent here, like, you know, and give them like a little bit of hope, a little bit of like motivation to say, oh, like, that's Finn and JD and they're here, and if they can do it, maybe I can do it, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So and then obviously we can use it kind of as a scout mission too, and kind of like bring some names back to the office and say, hey, we need to keep an eye on these lads. So
yeah,
there's a couple of lads we'll be keeping an eye on.
Yeah. Like an old school kind of cross territory promotion kind of thing back in the day. Touching on what you said, we actually have a good representation of Ireland now in the WWE. Before, when I used to watch it, there was nobody. Like Finlay, but like Finlay technically wasn't even Irish.
Belfast, yeah.
Belfast was it, because when Sheamus won, they were like, oh, the first Irish born wrestler. And I was like, is Finlay not from Belfast now? Like, what way is he doing this? He's getting political here. But, you have yourselves, Sheamus, Becky Lynch. Am I missing anyone else?
Yep.
Lyra Valkyria. She's on Raw as well.
She
came up with me and... Yeah, she's there now. So it was five of us, right?
Yeah.
On Raw.
Yeah, that's a
big representation.
And SmackDown to the three arena.
Yeah, so it's a big issue that, like, we're on Raw. All the Irish are pretty much on Raw. But the last couple of times WWE have been coming to Dublin, so it's always been the SmackDown roster. So, we're not on it, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Make that make sense, boys.
Sure. Nothing makes sense.
But I remember one of the things when, like, Sheamus was on it. He was just a fella from Ireland, but he had a Dublin accent. And I'm like, this is deadly, because they didn't try and change him. They were like, go out there and he's bleeding.
Yeah.
Just talking like us. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's the same with Jews. Yeah. It's nice that they're like, no, this is where you're from. Just stick with it. Don't try and portray
yourself. Well, it makes it a lot easier when you're just kind of portraying a version of yourself. You know? Like, if you really have to be, if I have to pretend like, I don't know, I'm a French cook or something, like, I'm not going to be good at doing that, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm just a lad from Bray that, wrestling, it's easy to portray that, you know.
Yeah, but keeping the accent, it's great to hear it as well.
Yeah.
And obviously, what you were saying, you're giving people over here the talent coming up, you're giving them a goal.
Yeah.
If they're like, he sounds like me, I can be that kind of that fella, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's class.
Look, lads, I know you just have to shoot off.
Oh, yeah.
Start warming up?
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually have to give them a lift. Hopefully I'm not clamped.
Look, lads, thanks very much for coming in. We really appreciate it. We know how busy you are. And Finn, obviously, we were in contact with you and you finally had spare time to come in.
Yeah.
And you brought the main man with you. So we have the belt here. We really appreciate it, boys. Thanks very much for coming in. Do you have anything you need to plug?
No, just thanks for having us on. Congrats on all you lads. Success. Like, two lads living away. We'll be in the road all the time, and like, we'll be in the car and we'll like put the podcast on just to like miss home a little bit more. So, like, cheers. Really appreciate what you do, and what you're doing is great for Ireland, and it's great for everyone listening. So, thanks very much, lads.
Yeah. Thanks very much, boys.
Yeah, thanks for flying the flag overseas as well. You know what I mean? To show that you don't just have to be this stereotypical go and get yourself a good job because someone in your family has it. You can go and break the mold, and who would have thought that we'd have a contingent of Irish people in fucking WWE? Do you know what I mean? Of all the things, like, had such a big fan base here. It sells out every time it comes here. Now we have actually representation there, and they're coming in with gold around the bleeding waist as well. So thanks very much, lads. Yeah.
All right, cheers.
That's it,
thank you, lads.
Yeah, take us out, Lorden.
Boom.
Talking Bollocks with FBT Gyms. Unleash your fitness potential with no contract and full class access. FBTGyms.ie.
Go loud. Sounds better with us.
Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your weight in it now. Fill your body up. Work it hard and slow. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp Therapy Online. There are so many things that kids are curious about and they just have no fear diving in to learn something new.
Yeah, like how to do a wheelie.
Yeah. And then as we grow older, we don't take the time out to learn new things. But curiosity doesn't have to be lost to childhood. Thankfully, therapy can help you reconnect with your inner child and get you excited to learn and grow again.
Now, I might not be able to teach you how to do a wheelie, but it helps give you the skills to get back on the bike no matter how many times you've fallen off.
if you're thinking about starting therapy, then why not give BetterHelp a try?
All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
And it's entirely online, making it convenient, flexible, and suitable no matter your schedule.
With over 5,000 therapists available, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise.
Rediscover your curiosity with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/bollocks to get 10% off your first month.
That's betterhelp.com/BOLLOX.